This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Joe Saxton is an author, speaker, and church planner whose passion is empowering church leaders, especially encouraging women to realize their potential and purpose. And she joins us today. Hey, Joe.
Hi, how are you?
We're good. Joe, in your book, The Dream of You, you write about the temptation of perfectionism, how to balance sort of drive and ambition, but then resist, you know, that pursuit of perfection or that never-ending pursuit, and to not find your self-worth in your achievements. How do you manage that all?
I think the honest answer is with difficulty.
Yes.
I think I don't know many people who feel like they're enough all the time.
Mm.
And so I've found over the years in my own journey, I've had to kind of set a place where it's like, okay, I'm going to be at peace with the contribution I can make in this chapter of my life. That the work I do will be good enough, and not that in a passive way and not in a slacking off way, but simply recognizing that the skills and gifts I have can do so much, and that the other things, in my case as a person of faith, I just have to kind of let go of, rather than feel that I'm always performing as a mother, performing as a wife, performing as a child, performing as a colleague, performing as well, as a human being, it can get exhausting if we try and be everything all the time to all people.
In your book, you describe a time when you were about 7 years old. Racial tensions were high around London where you lived, and the women in your family gave you the talk. How did that affect your sense of identity?
Yeah, my aunt and my mum were immigrants, Nigerian immigrants. They'd lived in England, I want to say 20 years by that point. And they had endured racial aggression, abuse, misunderstanding, as well as the inevitable kind of distance you feel when you've left home and you're making your way in a new home. And I think they had lots of dreams as well that didn't get to be fulfilled. So part of what my aunt in particular was trying to do was to prepare me for the reality I was in. And her thing was basically, Joe, as a woman and as a black woman, being good isn't going to be enough. You won't get work. And their goal was really, we want our children to get good jobs. We want our kids to make the way in the world to be fully functioning citizens of this new world that we're in. And so it was very much it was like a tough love talk, really, because they didn't even sound bitter when they said it. It was just, this is how it is, and we really want you to do well, and I see the potential you have. But if you're going to realize it, you're going to have to be twice as good as everybody because they won't take you seriously. We've lived 20 years of not being taken seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what it did for my identity, I mean, I'm a kid at the time, so on one level I'm hearing this and then I'm watching Wonder Woman. And it's all happening on the same day, you know. It's like, that's great, Auntie, can I have some chicken? I mean, that was. But as I grew older and encountered similar racial aggression, similar gender-based discrimination, I was like, oh, okay. And it made me very focused, for sure. It made me work hard. But I think, you know, I think that the flip side of it, my aunt, when she gave me that advice, was talking specifically about work. I think I applied it to everything else. I was like, okay, I've got to be twice as good as a friend. I've got to be twice as good as a child of God. I've got to be twice as good as a wife, as a mother, all the things. And that's exhausting.
Yeah, I bet.
It's exhausting, and it can send you slightly wappy. So in terms of identity, the problem is, if you reach the top and you don't know what you're going after, when do you stop?
Mm.
When do you know when you've done enough? If you've always been told it's never going to be good enough, when do you know you can breathe and step back? When do you know that, when do you pick up the scars and say you need to heal from these things rather than keep on trying? You can become quite one-dimensional without realizing. And I think that was, although on one level it helped me massively at school and to navigate some very painful places, it did come at a cost as well.
Yeah, well, it does sound exhausting. And, you know, we live in such a fast-paced world and
yeah.
physical and mental load of work and caring for loved ones and, you know, never feeling enough is exhausting. What do you do for self-care? How do you be able to keep going?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've had to find different ways of doing this in different chapters of my life. And I think I've had to pay close attention. I'm in my 40s now. In this chapter of my life, I've had to pay attention to my body, which seems to have its own schedule. particularly with this metabolism, it feels like it's time to slow down. I feel it should stay where it was in its 20s.
Amen, sister.
I'm like, seriously, what happened? Why can't I eat what I want anymore? But I've had to pay attention to things like friendships. Like, I'm busy, I have kids, I have a job, I have a husband, I have other things. And I've had to make time for friends and make time for fun. I've had to listen to what my body is saying to me in terms of, you do need sleep, you do need rest. Burnout is not a gift. Mm. It actually costs you. And let's not celebrate exhaustion as though you get a badge of honor for hitting a wall. Things like that. I've had to pay attention to things that bring me alive. You know, I love to run. I love to work out. I'm not saying I'm great at it, by the way, before we get any notion. I just need it for my well-being.
Yeah.
When I was in my 30s and my kids were young, I had postpartum, do you call it postpartum depression or postnatal depression here?
Both, really, yeah.
Both. And it was one of these painful wake-up calls where the whole world went grey. Every day, it just went grey. And I loved my daughter and I loved my husband, but I was scared of everything else. I couldn't go out to get a coffee. I remember trying to get a coffee and driving home because I was scared of how to make the order in case I got it wrong. Mm. And in that chapter of my life, self-care looked like going to the doctors, being willing to get a prescription and getting the help I needed and not being ashamed of that and not allowing outside stigmas, real or perceived, to stop my own well-being.
Mm.
At different chapters, it's meant working out the healthiest ways to process pain rather than numbing it in certain things. It's been taking a walk. It's been saying that can wait until tomorrow. Self-care has been turning off Instagram. Do you know what I mean? Walking away from my phone and not allowing a filter to define my worth. It's been investing in my faith and allowing my faith to define my value rather than, again, real or perceived words of others.
So true, Jo. Mm. You touched on, you know, your body and a big challenge for many women is body image.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
How can the church speak into this? And is it an area meant for female leaders to address, or is there a place for men to do it as well?
I would say it's for all of us to address. I think body image works its way differently for men, but I think it's there too. My limited understanding would be. But I think that I think in today's culture, we have to work at what we celebrate. I remember one woman who was a powerful, wonderful worship leader. This was years ago when I first moved to the States. She felt like when she was auditioning for her worship team, they were auditioning her body as well and whether it looked right, whether it fitted. Right. And the scars that leave somebody with to be told, there you are bringing your gifts and your talents, which your understanding is an act of worship to God. And then someone say, but your body isn't though, so... Mm. And they didn't say in the issue of health. They didn't talk to her health and well-being. They actually spoke to her shape. So I think there is something. You know, I'm from two cultures. I'm a Brit, but I'm a Nigerian, and they have very different views on body.
Oh, yeah.
Very different. And it can be weird. It can be weird to work out which one is valuable today. And as we live in an increasingly multi-ethnic world, where we travel the world and we see different body shapes and see different values, how will we as church express a time age word, which is you are fearfully and wonderfully made?
Mm.
And we have to articulate that in what we say. That has to become our norm because our children are listening as well. I'm keenly thinking of that because I have two daughters, but actually our sons are listening. Our young adults are listening. What are we saying to our seniors in our cultures who have retired? Are they useless because they don't look a certain way anymore, because their bodies don't function? What are we saying to our differently abled members of our family? Are we saying that they're not of value because they use a wheelchair or because their bodies don't function in the ways that ours function? On one level, it may seem like, oh, we're just saying people look cute. But actually, it says a lot about human dignity, the way we speak of our body, our skin tone, our hair, all of those things.
Mm. Jo, just finally, you know, we live in this time with a lot of interesting dynamics for women. You know, our voices are rising and we're gaining more influence in many ways. Of course, there's still, you know, more progression needed in this area. I'm a mum of a son and I've got the most incredible husband. And so it's really important that we don't perpetuate this false narrative that all men are against women and holding them back.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Yeah, but how do you hold both genders in high regard and send the right message to your daughters and other women who, you know, you want to empower, that men are still wanted and created by God and are not holding us down?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have, and it's an interesting one, this, isn't it? Because I think as people have been able to be given voice, particularly in an area like the Me Too movement or Church Too movement, as people have been given voice, you also hear the rage and the pain, which has been long needed to be heard. And so I can understand how in the kind of, we need to say all these things, that the heightened emotion has sometimes come across in a way which is like, wow, this is sharp, partly because it's been held back for so long. But I think one of the things that we can do is as we clarify holding back, we can specifically address situations and not generalize. Because as a woman, I've never enjoyed being generalized. As a black woman, I've never enjoyed being generalized. And so we've got to make sure in the language we use that we are saying, where are the systems holding us back? Where are old habits? Where have specifically particular men held us back? Mm-hmm. And on one level, that sounds quite retentive in the language, but it stops it from saying all men. It stops us from saying all men. If I, and there have been times when men have been particularly discriminatory towards me. When I'm giving that story, I don't want to name that person because that's not necessarily helpful either right now, but I will say that specific individual. I want to tell the stories of men who have empowered me and informed me as well as the ones who have not been ideal. I think it's important to give voice to both. So that's one of the things I like to do. I like to celebrate whenever things are going well. And I like to celebrate the people who are doing things well. And I think that's one of the ways we can ensure that. Who have been the leaders who have thoroughly cheered women on? Let's elevate their voices, elevate their example. And I'm not saying that to minimize the pain of those who've been through some terrible things, because I think they do need that day. They do need that time to say what it's been like. But I think when we point out the negative and when we point out how things have held us back, I think it's worth qualifying. It may mean that you don't get to say it in a soundbitey way. I think, you know, you may not get to limit it to 185 characters on Twitter, but I think it's worth taking the time to specifically say, hey. And I think, you know, the other thing, I think it's worth sometimes saying, sometimes people have held people back and it's not been intentional. I've met many a guy who has said, I didn't realize quite what I was doing with how I was developing leaders or not developing leaders. I thought that woman would say what she hoped for. I didn't realize I was perpetuating a problem. I didn't realize I was perpetuating myths or stereotypes in some way. And I think there's it's important for us to articulate that we're on a journey, and that some of our men and women are on a journey of understanding how we do this better. It's hard. I think this is a hard one because there's real pain and there's real learning going on all at the same time.
Thank you so much, Jo, for your insights this morning. You can hear more from Jo Saxton at the New South Wales Baptist event Leadership Conversations today at Morling College, or you can check out her podcast Lead Stories.
Thank you very much. What fun. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.